Live from the winter meetings in Dallas, all presented by Cone Resnick. It's Greg Amstinger with Mark DeRosa and Tom Verducci. John Heyman with this. Juan Soto to the Mets. It's real. $765 million. Mark DeRosa, how do you wrap your brain around?
He just changed the game. For every player that will come after him, will to aspire to be him. Last year, Tom, I thought Shohei Ohtani was an outlier because he could do both. He just got $65 more million to hit.
It's amazing. We were all blown away by the Ohtani contract. And speaking of blown away, that's what Juan Soto has just done. Only a year later to that staggering number that Ohtani put up. You see that $765, $51 million a year with no deferrals? I mean, listen, we said going into this all along, we thought that Steve Cohen had a number that was going to be beyond anybody else, the owner of the New York Mets, and he proved that.
Jeff joins us now. I think I can figure out what sorted this out, Jeff, and it's the money. It's always the money. But this is a conversation that involved many different teams, many different suitors. What ultimately led the Mets to get to a place that others would not get?
The Mets weren't that much at a different place, Scott, than the New York Yankees were. The Yankees had a $760 million offer, only $5 million less, spread out over 16 years. So it wasn't a huge demonstrable difference. In the end, I think Juan Soto looked at the New York Mets future and looked at the New York Yankees future and believed that the Mets have a better future than the Yankees, which is a wild thing to think, right? The Yankees have been the most successful franchise in North American professional sports history. They have 27 championships. The New York Mets have been the New York Mets. And so to see the transformation that Steve Cohen has helped make with this franchise over the last 4 years after he bought it, to turn them from laughingstock into the team that Juan Soto wants to play with because he believes that they are going to have a brighter future, speaks volumes about what he has been able to do since he has bought the team. And this, I think, is just the beginning. They are going to spend more money. They are going to continue to have payrolls like this. And to spend $765 million to be up potentially at $805 million, it seems unfathomable, but that is how ultimately the New York Mets got Juan Soto.
One thing that Soto articulated to David Stearns and Steve Cohen through this process was that he did believe in Cohen. He did believe that Cohen was going to be a good owner, is already a good owner, was building something good. So that was something. That's not a knock on Hal Steinbrenner. That's just something where I think Steve Cohen, the salesman, and not just Steve Cohen, the checkbook, really helped close this deal here late.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Monday, December the 9th, 2024. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com, no G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG, and I'd love for you to subscribe to the newsletter, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Good morning, everybody. Kicking off the winter meetings here at the Talking Mets Podcast. And wow, what a night. And well, I'll start with this, just kind of ease into this. So all day, refreshing Twitter, X, went out for a little bit, but it was funny, last night I was kind of trying to figure out how to do this show, and I'm like, well, if Soto signs on a Monday, I'm going to probably, in the middle of the day, probably marinate on it, later at night, 7, 8, 9 o'clock, be able to put a show up, and that's going to stink because, you're going to be scrambling a little bit. But as the night went on and you heard rumblings that a decision was coming, I'm just like, well, when is he going to announce something? Because I don't want to go on the air. I had some plans to do some winter meeting stuff non-Soto, but I obviously mentioned where Soto was. I'm like, the show's going to go stale really quick. And sure enough, about a quarter to 11-ish, or there's about. It had to be because I watched Yellowstone, and that ended at 9:30, and then I was doing some prep for the week ahead, and had to be like an hour in, and then I was relaxing and scrolling on X, and I saw the John Heyman tweet, and I'm like, well, John Heyman says it, that's real. There was so many other fake, and the process of this whole Soto thing, the fake between the Boston stuff on Thanksgiving and all these insiders that are just fans. I know someone who knows someone who knows someone. I really have never seen a free agency like this. I mean, maybe LeBron for sure. I mean, that was wild, the decision and all that stuff back in 2010. And that was kind of like the first free agency where people were like, oh, I saw LeBron here, or they thought about, I know LeBron is doing this. Or was it Robert Randolph said the Knicks had signed LeBron when he did, and it was wild. I mean, JT the Brick, Raiders announcer, oh, I saw Cohen at Del Frisco's with Cohen. Who knows if it's true? Pictures over on a Saturday of Soto at a restaurant with his agents, and then like photoshopping Fenway Park and behind them say, oh, he's in Boston, and it's like, ah, oh. And I gotta tell you, it's over, and that's the first sigh of relief, because this has really held up the baseball winter, and I'm really looking forward, and obviously I'm way excited about Soto signing with the Mets. We'll get to that, but there's so much more work to do, and there's so much more baseball to talk about, and I think we were at a point of exhaustion. So it could not end soon enough. And you know what the best part about all this is? All like on X, that For You that comes up where they suggest people and I know some people don't like it, but it is helpful because I've started to learn about accounts that are connected to things that I'm interested in, baseball-wise. But it's also showing you all this fan garbage and all these Yankee fans popping up in my feed talking about Soto. And I got to tell you, I knew it was a delusional fan base. I knew it was a fan base that had a lot of issues. I mean, I was there for the 90s. I saw how they act. I mean, you saw a synopsis of the fan base in the World Series with the whole Mookie Betts glove incident. But the one thing I'll say that George Steinbrenner's legacy, and he should be very proud of, because it's very hard to do this, he indoctrinated a generation, not just a handful, a generation of Yankee fans who now are indoctrinating their kids. So this thing is not going to end quietly, to believe that pinstripes and the Yankees and Yankee Stadium and just being in the vicinity of the Yankees somehow is something, an out-of-body experience of some sorts. It's amazing. And look, I get it. There's a lot of history. It is a surreal feeling. I always talk about, when I interviewed Ernie Harwell many, many years ago, the thought that I'm talking to somebody that had interviewed Ty Cobb back in the day. Like these figures in history that are real but don't seem real. I get it. But man, that fan base is deluded. Deluded to think that money wouldn't matter. Deluded to think that another team possibly has something to offer. That there are alternatives to Standard Oil and being the house all the time, or the history, or the stuffy history, or pinstripes, or whatever you want to call it. And again, sidebar note. But I said at the beginning of the winter that there are certain times in a team's history where you have to seize the moment. And we talked a lot about how the Mets, since the 80s, even going back to the 80s, did not necessarily seize the moment for greatness. Sure, they won in 86, but they couldn't leverage that. They couldn't double down on that. And there was a lot of reasons why: self-inflicted wounds, bad luck, getting beat, all sorts of things. And then there was the worst team money can buy. And then the reemergence under Bobby Valentine and Mike Piazza, and what that really cool 90s team, that veteran, gritty 90s team brought. Great era, an era that I will always remember. But I talked about how this all really started 24 years ago, in my opinion, when Piazza's ball died at the warning track against Mariano Rivera, and the Mets lost the Subway Series, a series that they very easily could have won. And that winter, they had an opportunity to leverage that team, that run. They had back-to-back years where they were in the postseason, and bring in A-Rod and reinforce a roster that was good, but clearly had some deficiencies. They needed to, you know, inject more into that roster. And when A-Rod's contract got too rich, and Steve Phillips continues to talk about the 24 home run and the tent and all the other stuff, and they didn't even get involved, they jumped out of that very quickly and pivoted to a more component-driven plan. And then when that didn't work, doubled down by going after aging superstars like Mo Vaughn, like Robbie Alomar. And even though you had some fun pit stops along the way with the Reyes and Wright Mets, and then, of course, the 2015 run to the World Series, they always were lacking. You know, the Yankees, who had, the minute that Buck brought them to the playoffs in 95, and then the following year when Laird's, I really talk about when Laird's ball went over the wall against the Braves and they won that 96 World Series, the gap between these two teams has widened. And then to add insult to injury, the Mets, forget about the Yankees, because other than the Subway Series, or if they meet them in the World Series, it doesn't really matter. It's a marketing thing. The Mets did their own damage to their franchise where they never could really leverage, whether it be the elite starting pitching or the 2000 Subway Series or these two elite positional players in Reyes and Wright. They never could leverage that. They never could seize the moment. They always left things on the table. And a lot of that had to do with the financial aspect that Fred Wilpon could not do what Steve Cohen is doing right now. But it also was vision. It was also the kind of people running the team. And now you have the best of both worlds. You have the money. You have an owner that has gone on record and talked to this, basically spoke to Soto about how he believes it's a civic duty to not only revive this franchise, but make this franchise what everybody wants it to be. Sure, what he's doing in the neighborhood with the community, with the casino, which some people may or may not like, but building up that surrounding area, which has been a wasteland since the World's Fair. I mean, think about that. There's going to be a pot of gold in that. We know that. Nobody does nothing for nothing. But Steve Cohen has the ability to do a lot and not make the money that other people who have to invest the amount that he's got to invest in this baseball team would reasonably expect to get back. He's not necessarily looking to go broke here, but this is not just the P&L for him. But there's always something in it. So let's not make him St. Steve. But when it comes to the baseball team, and I've said this over and over again, a baseball team is a nice medallion, but it's a money pit. It's kind of like your house, but worse. Because everybody says, oh, look at all the money they bring in. Yeah, there's the revenues from television and cable and, you know, concessions and merchandise. But when you start off in the hole where you could be a couple of hundred million in the hole with payroll and all the other expenses to run a ball club, the profit margins, if there are, and there are, you know, it's but I don't think it's as much as people think. It's a lot of money to invest for a little bit. And Cohen has said that if he wanted to really make money, he wouldn't be putting it into the New York Mets. He'd be doing something completely different. So this winter, after the OMG Grimace, after they had this big run, and ever since really the ball in Atlanta went over the wall when Lindor flipped the script, when the yoke started to break off, and then they went on to that dramatic win with Pete's homer in Milwaukee, and obviously what happened in Philly, and they did get beat by a really historically good team in the Dodgers, and they're getting better, and a team that wasn't even at full strength. That's the scary part, wasn't at full strength. They had a choice. They had a choice where they could live off that vibe and do what probably every other Mets regime would do, would say, hey, this is an expensive player. I'm going up against the Yankees. The heartbreak of losing to the Yankees is too much for me to bear. Let me stay out of this and market and leverage OMG and Grimace and the good vibes and go very good around a very good team and try to take this lightning in a bottle and make it something more. And look, that's not a horrible idea. Chemistry counts. But this Mets team, and Gary Cohen talked about it last night on SNY, is one of the rare teams in baseball history where I think the chemistry led to winning, because it's usually winning leads to chemistry. Winning is all about, and chemistry is all about, guys accepting their roles, enjoying their roles, and being the best version of themselves within those roles, and coming every day prepared and focused on their job. And everything else works itself out. They don't necessarily have to like being around each other, but this team did. And Cohen and Stearns knew that that wasn't going to be enough. I mean, and Stearns could do, and you've seen it, and he's going to do more of that. He could find value. I mean, they're doing this with Frankie Montas. Now they're trying to go the next step with the starting pitching, and they bring in Clay Holmes, a reliever, a darn good reliever. Maybe not an elite closer, even though he had good numbers, but a guy that could ever be the setup man that that I've been talking about that Edwin Diaz needs, and a guy who could sub it at closing. They're going to try to make him a serviceable starter. And they continue, and we don't need to get into that today, but they continue to scour the scrap heap for guys that are maybe diamonds in the rough that could possibly make that bullpen a little bit better without breaking the bank. So they could continue to do that. They will continue to do that. But they needed their foundation. They needed their big fish. And they got it last night. They got it in Juan Soto. And yes, money played into this. And yes, if the Mets give him the extra $4 million a year after 5 years, that contract's going to be north of $800 million. So it did blow away the Yankees' offer, but not by a lot. And I really think that Soto saw, and the way the Mets approached this, Soto saw what the Mets were trying to do, and he said to himself, if I wanted to be with the Yankees, and if Soto wanted to be with the Yankees, that was the deals between the two was bridgeable. I'm sorry. All he had to do was call the Yankees and go, look, the Mets are getting wild here. But I really like you guys. I really liked what we had here. I like the pinstripes. I like the history. Historically, me and Judge could be Maris and Mantle modern day. Let's make this happen. Because it's a bridgeable gap. And if the Yankees weren't willing to do that, that's a different story. And as of 6 o'clock here on this Monday morning, we have not heard that. Maybe we'll hear something more. You're going to hear a lot of spinning out of the Yankees. It's already starting with Martino saying, well, they were ahead all along till tonight. Baloney. That's not what I heard, and I find it hard to believe that at 11:30 on Sunday, he pivoted from one to the other over $60 million. I'm sorry. I know it's a lot of money, but when you're talking about the level of money here, it's not 400 to 500 or 400 to 700. It's marginal, and it's a bridgeable gap. So we'll leave it at that. He saw the way, and the more that comes out here, Cohen didn't present to Soto. He pitched him. He did it. Like you heard what Martino said. He's a salesman. You don't get to be Cohen just by trading and making money. That's how you start your wealth. When you get to the heights in the finance world that he's at, you got to pitch people to give them you their money. And we're not talking about $100,000, you know, investment here. We're talking about millions and millions and millions of dollars. I mean, the guy's worth $20 billion. You're talking about people handing their pensions over for you to invest, like a union pension or things like that. If you ever watched Billions, I mean, you could get a sense of the kind of investment you're talking about. We're talking about serious people, serious money, serious stakes. And if you think presenting to a baseball player is going to scare a guy like that, then you got another thing coming. But anytime you go into sales, if you're good at it, it's about a personal touch. Especially when the differences are marginal. And Cohen knew going into this, he was going against history. He was going against the guy that had just played in the World Series. A guy that had the specter of playing with an elite, maybe the best power hitter of certainly this generation. But he might go down as one of the best power hitters of all time, and Aaron Judge. He was up against that. He was up against the Yankees' history. He had Mets failure. Sure, he had OMG and Grimace and the recent good vibes, which certainly recency bias helps when you're selling people. But it's easy to look at that and say, well, that's an outlier. Look at 2021. Look at what happened in 22. Look at the disaster of 23. Heck, look at where you guys were on Memorial Day. That wasn't that long ago. And Cone was able to spin that all around and show his vision and show where this team is going, even though they don't have a rotation yet. And maybe their bullpen is short. And guess what? There's more work to be done on the offense because Lindor and Soto, the Mets now have two of the top 10 players in baseball on their roster, is a great foundation. But it ain't enough. This is not going to be LeBron James and Dwayne Wade. This is not the NBA. You need players around them, and they need another very good bat. Is that bat Pete Alonso? We'll see. I hope so. I'd love to see Pete come back on the right deal. I've heard some things that make me think that may not happen, but they're unconfirmed, and I won't get into that. I mean, is it going after a Santander and putting him in the outfield? Is Bregman in play at third and moving Vientos to DH? We'll see. We'll see where they're going to go, and I think you're going to start to see that. Clearly, they need pitching. Is it Manaea? I like the thought of Eovaldi, Walker Buehler. I don't think they should just stop at one starter. I think they need two, because who the hell knows what's going to happen with Clay Holmes? And it sounds like, and we'll go deeper into the rotation, and that was going to be one of the things I do if Soto didn't sign, they're going to go with a six-man rotation. They're going to start to do, the vision now is clear. They're going to go after big fish and invest and overpay, and like Andrew Friedman of the Dodgers says, if you're rational about free agents, you're always going to finish third. Overpay, and they'll do it for offense. And maybe they'll do it with Alonso. Who knows? Maybe they'll do it with Bregman. Who knows? Maybe they'll do it with Santander. Who knows? They're going to need another very good bat in this lineup. And they're going to go and do component-driven with the bullpen. And they could do a lot of that because of Diaz. And then they're going to try to use their pitching development and Hefner and all the things they do to find good pitchers that may need to become a little bit better, and they think they could do it. It's a risk. But when you put together a really good offense, a good offense will allow you to figure a lot of this stuff out through the early spring and early summer so that by the time you get to the deadline, you could say, okay, this is what we need to really be a serious contender. And Soto, off the bat, even without Alonso in this lineup, makes this lineup better. And if they do what I think they're going to do and get some very good bats around these two guys against Lindor and Soto, they're going to be a team that's going to score over 5 runs a game. And if you have competent pitching, you should be able to win by scoring over 5 runs a game. So, you know, this is exactly the scenario that we laid out at the beginning of the offseason, the challenge that went out there, that I put out there to Cohen. This wasn't easy. And I'll tell you what, I was always cautiously optimistic, but I'm not saying that I was confident 100% that they were going to land them. Everybody, you know, kept saying, you know, those who I talked to and the tea leaves just looked like this was going in the right direction. And I'll tell you, the Yankees made this more of a contest than I expected. I expected the Red Sox to be more of a threat, and I do think the Red Sox put out a good pitch. I never took Toronto seriously. For the mere reason that the money gap had to be so enormous. Like, they had to go so much above because of the Canadian taxes. And I'm not sure that they have the same clear future that the Mets do, or at least a vision. You know, nothing's clear about the future. But to me, this was one of the biggest wins in the Mets franchise history. I was there when Beltran signed. That was a huge win at a time when the Mets needed to wash away the Kazmir situation and all the bad vibes from not going after A-Rod and the post-Subway Series malaise that was setting in. And Omar did a great job with Pedro and Carlos Beltran that offseason, and then with Delgado the following year. And he almost won a championship doing that. That was kind of a, you know, makeshift pull it together around Reyes and Wright. And that was huge when they signed Beltran. And they did kind of beat the Yankees in that one, but the Yankees didn't play. It's almost like, hey, you want to play? And the Yankees said, nah. So you really can't count that. They have not gone after mano-a-mano a free agent in any way, shape, or form, these two clubs. And historically, when the Mets thought about Mussina, the Yankees said, no, you're not getting Mussina. And when it would have been nice to have Giambi back in 2001, Giambi had no intention of going anywhere but the Yankees. And remember, you know, those stars in their late 20s, early 30s there in 2001, they're still riding off the mantle and the Yankee narrative from, you know, what a lot of baby boomers did growing up. And the more that you get away, this is a 26-year-old man, this Soto. that doesn't necessarily resonate with a modern player. You have to have a different pitch. And the Yankees' pitch is pinstripes, history, and legacy. And the hubris of the fans to think, and this is where they make me laugh, that only one team has a legacy. Everybody has a legacy. You don't think the Cardinals and what they offer and being a star in St. Louis isn't a fun legacy or a good legacy for some people? The Red Sox? You don't think that? You don't think that that's part of it? I understand that there's a certain cachet to the history of what the Yankees are in New York, but when the Yankees turned things around in 1996, they didn't look backwards. They looked forwards, and they made the pinstripes something new, fresh, and different. I'm not so sure that this front office can do that. And this fan base cannot look forward. They can't even look forward when it comes to shortstops. Every shortstop, whether it be Didi Gregorius, Anthony Volpe, that comes in is the next Derek Jeter. No, he's the next Anthony Volpe. He's the next Didi Gregorius. You're never going to see what the 90s did. They may, but it's not for a long time. It's like the Mets looking back to 86. And I know they've done a little bit of that by honoring Doc and Daryl and Keith over the last few years, and hopefully they'll honor Carter at some point. But I think part of that is they're trying to put 86 in the closet because they're tired. Everyone's tired of it. They're tired of talking about it, reliving it, making it the benchmark. This is about a new era. This is Cohen selling a new era. I think Cohen sold new, Cohen sold fresh, Cohen sold vision, and the Yankees sold Standard Oil. The Yankees sold American history. And there's nothing wrong with that, but at some point, history's history. You got to put it in the book and you put it in the past. You learn from it, you respect it, but you can't belabor it. I think they've got to the point of belaboring it. And I think this is a new world order. And I think Yankee fans are, I mean, clearly go on X. I mean, burning jerseys, cursing Soto out. They're in shock. They really honestly did not believe that somebody of the ilk of Soto would pick the Mets over them. They look at the Mets, they've used terms like sewer rat. I mean, this goes down and shows you what they think of you, despite the fact the Mets were every bit as good as the Yankees this year. I know they didn't go to the World Series, but that was the draw they had in terms of the tournament. They beat them head-to-head pretty handily. At least I saw those games. Maybe they didn't. Even the media. I mean, when I saw Ian O'Connor, and he's part of that 90s crew with Heyman and Sherman and O'Connor and Clappish. And I love these guys. I mean, look, I grew up reading them. I have a ton of respect for them, not knocking them. But he almost sounded offended in his tweet earlier in the day on Sunday that Soto, well, how much more does he want? The Yankees offered you $700 million. How do you not take the Yankees' money? Because he doesn't want to be a Yankee. And they're not used to hearing that. They're not used to hearing somebody that they want that is of the status of a Soto saying, I don't necessarily want to play here. And I'm sorry. Yes, money played into it. And there is a gap in the money. I get it. But if you wanted that, if you wanted the pinstripes, if you wanted that legacy, if you believed in that, that was a gap they could have made up. Mets won this thing. Don't let anybody tell you otherwise. The Mets sold them. Cohen sold him. He knew the money was going to be there. There was no way Cohen was going to make it hard for this guy to turn him down money-wise. But I'm telling you, they could have easily, Boris and Soto, used the Mets, jacked the Yankees offer up, and just went right back to the Yankees. And they didn't. Now, maybe stuff will come out, but what I've seen come out now is the Mets did a good sales pitch, and they closed. Not to sound like Boiler Room or Glengarry Glenn Ross here, but they closed. And now it just gets harder because now the Mets are in the deep end of the pool. This is not the innocent climb anymore, guys. The innocent climb will always be something special. We'll always have a special place for the 2024 Mets and that season and that run. Believe me, it will always go up there. It'll be up on the mantle like 15, like 99, like 2000. Like 2006, for a variety of different reasons. But now it's about taking the next step and building a winner. And you could still have the good vibes and the good chemistry and all that stuff, but you need to balance that with some players. And guess what? You got yourself a doozy of a player. Do you realize, from a run creation standpoint, Soto is fifth. I talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Is fifth since the year 2005. There's only one player that walks more than Soto in the last 25 years, and that's Barry Bonds. Yes, I understand it's steroid Barry Bonds. I understand it's Barry Bonds that nobody wanted to throw a strike. But you look at his career, this is a guy that has the eye and the on-base skills of Barry Bonds. Think about that. The offense. Think about your favorite players all time. He's every bit on the offensive side of everything that you want in a player. Now, I understand the defense is lacking, and he doesn't pitch like Ohtani, so sure, you want to say he's overpaid? Sure. But for this franchise, for the kind of offense that he brings, I mean, when you're talking about guys like Bonds, I don't care, steroids or no steroids, when you're talking about him in the last 25 years with the Ortizes and the Manny Ramirez and A-Rod and all this other stuff that, from a run creation, when he's better than those guys, when he's in that conversation or at that conversation, even if you want to argue he's not better, stats are stats, numbers are numbers. I mean, that's who you're getting. And you're teaming him up with an elite defender in Lindor and a guy that now, you know, maybe could just be who he is. Because I think Lindor is a very good player. And he is a top statistically when you look at all different metrics on both, when you combine both sides of the ball. He's a top 10 player in baseball. Now, as a hitter, he's not. And he's top 20, 25. I don't think he's top 10. Maybe he's hugging it like Soto's an elite hitter. And the Mets got him. And you should feel good. Everything, every goal that was set about leveraging the 2024 vibes so far has been checked off. You got the big fish. You sold the franchise. Other players are seeing that. And you ripped the heart out of your crosstown rival. You are seeing a new world order. Now, job's not done. And the Yankees could go out there and sign Pete today and Santander, and maybe they get Fried or Burns. And all of a sudden, and be ready for it, because the Mets are not out of the woods when it comes to media narratives. The media will say, well, you know, $51 million for Soto, who's only, who's actually, according to certain radio hosts in this town, is Bobby Abreu. And I understand because of the on-base and the way he played, he's not Bobby Abreu. He's nowhere near Bobby Abreu couldn't be Soto in his best of years. And Bobby Abreu was a very good offensive player. And at times, maybe better defensively, but very similar defensively. They'll talk about how he's Bobby Abreu, he's 2D, he's two-dimensional, all the things. And the media will lap it up, just like they're going to give Hal Steinbrenner and Cashman some cover. And this is the payback for any kind of information that those guys gave them. And say, well, they ran it to the end, Cohen's checkbook, they did all they can. They've been setting this up from the start. And then you'll have those that grew up in the 90s Yankees era covering them that will throw the tantrums about how disrespectful Soto is to not take the pinstripe money and how he's throwing away legacy, because they love the legacy narrative. They're right in on that because they built it. I mean, I was around, guys. Do you know how hard it was growing up? I'm sure some of you, obviously you're my age, but for those that maybe weren't around, you know, and they were a good team. They earned everything they got, that Yankees team. I have nothing against, I admire that team. But when it became cartoonish is when it was, and I said this to somebody yesterday. I said, when The Sopranos came on the air, this is post-2000, and George had the Tampa faction, and he had the New York faction with Cashman and the baseball people. They always used to, the media used to lap up these secret meetings at a steakhouse in Tampa. And it was very mob-esque. It was George's inner circle. And like they tried to create like this mob type of like persona for George. Like he could swoop in and do these magical things as the mob boss that nobody else could do. And it was so tough to take. It was so tough to take. And the media lapped it up. And the Franceses and the Russos lapped it up. And it was tough. And you, as a Mets fan, and what you had in terms of resources, you tried to just play baseball and win baseball and do something special with what you had, but you always knew in this town, they're always going to give you a 50 cents on the dollar type of credit. And I think that's going to change. I don't think they realize the kind of world that Cohen's coming from. This is oligarch money. This is big boy money. You know, this is another level. I mean, maybe it's not, you know, the richest guy in the world. Maybe it's not Elon Musk, but He can make things happen. And he's going to. He's going to transform this franchise. He is transforming the franchise. He's going to transform the surrounding area. And he's going to do something, hopefully, special with this team and win a championship. Because it's not just about taking a player from the Yankees. That's a fun thing to talk about here a couple of weeks before Christmas. It's about sustainably winning and giving Mets fans the run that they were denied in the 80s and that they weren't smart enough or good enough to do in the 70s after 69. And they were not able to compete financially after 2000. He's going to give that to them for them to experience. Now, that innocent climb was cool, and maybe some of the blue-collar foundational components of this franchise will start to become harder to come by. It's going to get expensive, real expensive, to go to Citi Field. I understand that. We've talked about that. But you want to win. You want to win in today's sports world. You want to compete with the LA private equities out there in Los Angeles. This is how you do it. You want to do it the other way. You want to be plucky. You want to be... We tried. Look, you could win some, you could lose some, but you've done that now since pretty much the mid-90s, and look where it got you. Got you some nice seasons, it got you some great memories, but it got you a ton of frustration. You don't have to worry about that anymore. Now, we'll see what the Mets do. It's, you know, Soto can't pitch, Soto can't get outs in the sixth or seventh inning, and the lineup still needs some work. That's what the rest of the winter meetings is about. That's what the rest of the week is about. And we'll see where that goes. We'll see where that goes. So, hope you enjoyed a kicking off of the winter meetings talking about Soto. I feel like I've talked so much about him that as I come to you today, I was hoping to be able to recap the emotion, the feelings. I mean, the joy that you see out there. I mean, when I saw the tweet from Heyman, it was just like utter joy because it was, and I was ready for this to be over. And it would have been a hard crash if the Mets lost out to the Yankees. And this show would have taken a completely different turn. Wouldn't it be the end of the world, but it would have you question, you know, what does this team need to do to sell themselves? And guess what? They sold themselves. They don't have to do anything. They got to keep doing what they're doing. Sure, they got to break a checkbook. But checkbooks just get you to the table. Selling is what gets you the player. That's the close. And now I think it's going to be a lot easier to close other players. And guess what? You may not have to overpay for those players like you did for Soto. They may want to play here. They may want to come here. Look at when the Knicks made their moves. And I know that they've got some issues and they're still gelling and everything. How players like Jalen Brunson, they're taking less money. Maybe Mikal Bridges does that. All of a sudden, when you get involved with something special, other players who are not at that level of the elite, top of the top, say, that's enough money for me to get involved in something cool. You know, I mean, pay cuts are pay cuts. Nobody wants to take too big of a pay cut, but sometimes people want to be part of something special, and I think something special is coming. And what's the plan for the rest of the week? Well, I definitely want to do Twitter Spaces. Stay tuned. Go to X for that. I'll probably promote that over at the newsletter. Every night as we kind of move forward and hear things, I'm going to come to you. We'll probably do shorter one segment podcast. I'd like to talk about the pitching staff. I think it's really interesting what Stearns is doing with the starting rotation. I think the Clay Holmes signing is very interesting. That's not a conversation for right now. Soto has completely overshadowed it. And it's funny, all weekend I was like, how do I do this show? I mean, this was one of the hardest Sundays because I wanted to do something about the rotation. I wanted to maybe set up where we were with the final stretch of Soto. But I knew if that thing came out and the news broke, it was a complete waste of time. So I waited and waited, and I waited till nearly 6 o'clock here on a Monday morning to come to you. So have fun today. Feel good. Puff your chest out as you go to work and school or whatever you're doing. Feel good about this Mets team. Wear your colors proud. And guess what? I'm going to leave you with this. Cohen sold this. Cohen closed this with Stearns. The players on the field, the Lindors and what happened, especially in October, made this a place to be, but you, the fan, turned it around. You and I had a really tough spring at the beginning of the year. I called out the fan base in April, and a lot of people didn't like it when it was a mausoleum there against the Tigers in the doubleheader. And the negative energy of opening week, I said, you're letting the media and a narrative of the media sway your behavior. You're never going to give this team a chance, and this president of baseball operations a chance, and you're going to have a self-fulfilling prophecy. And things didn't look so good around Memorial Day after the Dodgers series. But as the team started to come together and play better, instead of waiting for the roof to cave in, things changed. And was it the song, OMG? Was it the vibe? Was it just you were tired of it? It doesn't matter at this point. During the Subway Series, I challenged the fan base at Citi Field to go out there and show Soto what he could be part of. And you did it. And the vibe at Citi Field during the postseason was incredible. And online and everywhere. So you look in the mirror and say, I was part of this, because vibes and vision and future doesn't happen with an empty stadium. It happens with you being part of it. Whether you could go to a ball game and afford to go to one game, 100 games, whatever, doesn't matter. Whether you can't go to any games and you just go on X and interact and watch it on your phone or TV, whatever, doesn't matter. You're part of it. And now this community just got itself a jolt, and you finally could say, we turned it around together. Some of you, like me, have been sitting around since 96 trying to figure out, how can we be that? And sometimes we get close, but never quite touch it. We're starting to touch it. Stakes are higher. The pressure's going to get up. The knives are not going away. The media knives are going to be out there. The opponent knives are going to be out there. The pressure of just trying to win is going to be out there. Atlanta's not going anywhere. Philadelphia's not going anywhere. They're not going anywhere. Mets are going to have to still win on the field. You don't win in December, but feel good today. Don't worry about all that. Don't worry about the rationality of the season. Feel good. Let's see what happens. Let's see what happens with Pete. Let's see what happens with improving the offense. Let's see what happens with the rotation. I think a lot of those things will be answered in the next 48 to 72 hours. And then the offseason's not done, because I don't think Stearns is going to complete his roster here in Dallas this week. But I do think a lot of the key parts of the roster, those questions may be answered. All right. Everybody, thanks for tuning in to this latest edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. Of course, you can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. NoG, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG, and I'd love for you to subscribe to the newsletter. Less than a cup of coffee a month. Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy your Monday. Smile and be proud. Juan Soto's a Met. We'll be back with more this week. Stay tuned. Go to X. Go to the newsletter. I'll let you know what's coming next. Till then, take care, everybody.
Meet the Mets. Meet the Mets. Head for the